why lock into a 7.5% 3 to 5 year conventional loan with prepayment penalties when you can take interest-only debt at a point and a half to a point and a half to 2 points over that, okay? No prepayment penalty. And if it pencils, meaning if the numbers work, you'll have an opportunity in 2 years to hopefully lock into long-term, as cheap as possible, interest rates going out for that, you know, for that either 5 or 10 year term that you're looking for.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Robert Withers is an investor, entrepreneur, and real estate finance professional with experience in conventional SBA and private equity. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. Great to be here.
Absolutely, Robert. The pleasure is mine. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Whoa. Okay. Where did I start? I started in the men's clothing business back in 1982. And basically what happened was I had was given an opportunity to be able to jump into the mortgage business because of the expensive men's clothing that I wore. Somebody took notice, saw that I was a sharp dresser, gave me an opportunity to be able to get into sales in the mortgage industry in the early 80s, and taught me the business. 4 years later, I went into my own business, started my own company. After three mortgage companies on the residential side, which I all sold, the last one right prior to the financial crisis, I took a little time off, reset things, decided that residential mortgages wasn't something that I wanted to do any longer, and jumped into the commercial real estate finance field. And I've been there ever since. That was in about 2014.
Got it. Okay. No, that's cool. How did you, when you sold all three of those businesses, this is getting into the weeds a little bit, but it sounds like you figured out how to do it once and you said, well, okay, we built one company. Why not go out and just do it again? But how did you get around non-competes? Or did you just...
I waited them out.
Okay.
I waited them out, you know, but you know, Sam, it's interesting you bring that up because I sold a mortgage brokerage. Now, I don't know if you know anything about our business, but not a lot to sell there, right? There's not a lot of, the really goodwill and maybe some of a pipeline that you may have in it. The companies weren't huge companies, but they did a few million dollars worth of business a year. So they were nice sized companies. My first one was a sale and I was young when I did it. So it was awesome. I sold it for 7 figures. I actually sold it to somebody who decided to invest the money back into the company so we could go national. That did not work out. It didn't work out for me. It didn't work out for him. And I wound up buying the company back, and then developed my second company. So the non-compete wasn't really an issue because of the fact that I kind of waited it out and then was able to buy the company back and take it into my second mortgage company, which I sold. Turned that actually into a mortgage bank that we were in several states. So it was kind of cool. We had a great time, but my partner and I had a disagreement in the direction. I wanted to take it more of a New York luxury market based, and he wanted to do government based business. And we agreed to disagree. It was very, cordial. And then my third, which launched me into my third company, which I shut down really, but sold off some pieces of it, but shut down prior to the financial crisis. Non-competes were really never an issue. Timing, because of the timing that everything took. So
right. Yeah. And if you're listening to this and you haven't sold a business, a lot of times there's going to be restrictions around you getting back into the same business, especially in the same geographic area, if it's a geographically bound company where it says,
absolutely,
hey, you know what, you can't for 3 or 5 years compete in this, you know, whatever the radius is from your business, or you know, and they're all structured differently. But that's really cool. I appreciate that you giving us the insight there. I think you may have answered this question, but you said in the company that you guys look to scale, because the name of the show is How to Scale Commercial Real Estate, you guys said, hey, we're going to scale, and I think the principles are the same. We're going to scale this business you know, across the United States. And you said that didn't work out. What were some of the lessons you learned in that didn't work out process?
I think for the most part, it was two things. We were really more of an East Coast, the leadership team on our company was really East Coast focused. So I found, as we talked to people throughout the country, that mindset and how things are done, both on a local basis and on a regional basis, differ greatly from New York to California, and from New York to Tennessee, and from New York to the, you know, to the northern parts of our country. So, you know, I think culturally, and not culturally, I think it was just a matter of mindset. And I think the way that we wanted to run our company isn't what we saw we could replicate well in other parts of the country. So we decided to really stay more on the East Coast. We were licensed in Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Florida. From that part, we were successful, and we were able to scale, but we were able to scale in what we knew rather than, you know, and you would think, you know, listen, you know, a product like a mortgage is universal, right? It's the same. It's a national thing. You know, it's rates are driven by national reasons. You know, there are state regulations, but for the most part, the markets that buy mortgage loans are national, right? Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. But doing a good job in markets that you don't understand, is it can be very difficult. And when management doesn't agree with what boots on the ground, or the philosophies of each, when there's no agreement, it's difficult. So
I could see that. And that's something that I think, until you've lived in various parts of our country, you may not understand. You know, here in Memphis, Tennessee, if you get on the phone, even with somebody, if I saw you yesterday, Robert, we're going to talk for about 6 or 7 minutes about nothing. We're going to talk about the weather. We're going to talk about, you know, family, all sorts of things. Did I lose you there, Robert?
No.
Okay, cool, man. That was that. You were still as a stone. I was like, oh shoot, maybe the internet froze. But no, we'll talk about a lot of different things long before we ever get to the reason for the call. It's just the way it's done. And I'm from Indianapolis. I was born there, and we don't really, like, we pretty much get on the phone and, hey, you know what you need, Robert? What's going on, man? And we get down to business. But here in Tennessee, man, I had to slow down. I'm like, wait, like, if I don't ask, and it's just kind of rude if you're just like, hey, what's up? Click, like, it just doesn't work.
Sam, you're from Indianapolis.
Right.
You were like right down to business. Now, I'm from New York.
Oh, you guys are even more so than Indy. I mean, you guys are like, what?
We jump a couple of spaces in front of you when it comes down to, okay, we won't even introduce ourselves. You know, we're pitching a product, you know, right. Which, right. Don't get me wrong. I'm a relationship builder. I've been in this industry for almost 40 years in one way or another. So I didn't survive this way by being transaction related.
And I'm not suggesting that. It's just a different way of communicating. And if you're not prepared to spend the 7 minutes talking on the phone about nothing, then people are going to think you're rude and be like, I don't want to deal business with
developing so. Relationships is something that, you know, I mean, you can start it in 7 minutes, but some of my best clients are ones that came back to me, you know, two or three times. We had spoken two or three times, transactions didn't work. And then all of a sudden it kicked in and things actually wound up gelling between the two of us. So relationship building is huge.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you giving the insight on that, because it's one of those things, even for people out raising capital, it's an important skill set to master. Am I talking to somebody from New York? Got New York investors, man. It's down to brass tacks on the beginning of the phone call. I call somebody from Memphis, Tennessee, and we're going to spend our time on the phone. And so it's knowing and being able to shift even gears immediately when you jump on the phone with those people, and knowing how that works is, I think it's an important skill that as you scale your business that you and your team have to master. So that's a rabbit hole, but I appreciate you taking the time to kind of go down some of that. Tell me about your business today. I know you said in 2014, you decided to get into commercial real estate finance. I know, can't believe I'm saying this. It's 10 years ago now. You know, 2014 was when I think things really started to recover in the real estate markets. Commercial real estate, residential real estate started to, you know, go on that upward curve that we've seen for the last 9 or 10 years. What, tell me about the business you guys are in today, and maybe give us, you know, if you can, just a quick rundown on what the last decades looked like and kind of how you guys are positioning yourselves now.
Changing. Things have changed a lot from going from an investment market where people, you know, where, you know, cap rates were compressed and, you know, they were low. And everybody, we, you know, we had cheap debt, let's face it. You know, at one point we were looking at 3%, you know, commercial real estate rates that were trading. So it wasn't hard to get a deal to pencil. So people were trading investment real estate left and right. We work in the, basically four major food groups or product sets is a better way of describing it. And that is we do a lot of SBA financing for owner-occupied clients who are looking to finance property they want to buy for their business. We do conventional financing for somebody who's buying a some sort of a mixed use or multifamily product or an industrial product for purposes of investment. Or owner occupied. We do bridge loan financing, which is short term, up to 3 years type financing, which, you know, is short term, a great tool for actually what's going on right now, because nobody's actually buying into conventional rates because they're high. So putting in a short term solution like a bridge loan makes a lot of sense in many cases. And spec construction, construction financing for the purposes of building a an investment property, whether or not it's a single family home, a bunch of different homes, you know something in the case of a development project, or you know, something that's more like an apartment building. We're not seeing a lot of mixed use or multifamily construction going on right now for the purposes of the investment markets. So we concentrate on those four types of programs here or products here. And from 14 to 23, for the most part, it's been up and down. You know, Sam, it's, you know, we started off really, like I said, in a very low interest rate market. So the products were really all, you know, either CMBS loans or they were regional banks. We don't do a lot of business with national banks. It's mostly local or regional banks offering great product. And as rates changed over time and opportunity changed over time, we shifted gears. Last year was our biggest year ever with SBA financing. We did a lot of SBA financing and bridge loan financing. So, and quite frankly, I think we're gonna see a repeat of that for 24. As they've been saying in our industry, and I don't know about your industry, Sam, but in our industry, they've been saying it's survive until 25. So, you know what? I think for the most part, you know, we're looking ahead and maybe, you know, going to see some of that investment type real estate come back in 2025.
Right.
No. Investment properties. You know, so
that makes a lot of sense. We're going to cover, I think, get into some of the more nuanced pieces of this. I'm looking here, bridge debt. You mentioned that bridge debt is a good tool for now. A lot of people, and I'm gonna ask you to tell me why I'm wrong. So a lot of people have taken on short-term debt in the last 2 to 3 years. And from this side of things, I look at it and say, man, bridge debt's a bad deal. It's a bad deal because right now there's, I don't know how much, what is it? What, and you could probably give me the accurate number on this. I'm going to pull this one up and say it's north of $1 trillion in debt coming due in 2024 on commercial.
Close to it.
I'm sorry?
Close to it.
Right. So in some of that, I would venture to say, I don't have any empirical evidence to substantiate this claim, but I would say that a large part of that is probably bridge debt, where it's like, hey, man, we got to get out of this. We don't know how to get out of it. We got to refi somewhere. And so we're going to see cash in refis happening and or assets selling at a massive discount because of the way they structured the debt. Tell me why you say, in light of that frame, tell me why you say that bridge debt is still a good tool for now, and how do you use it without playing with fire?
Interest rate cycles, Sim. interest rate cycle was lower 3 years ago when this debt was originated. So there, unfortunately, that debt that's coming due is being refinanced in a higher interest rate market. We've, for the most part, if you're to believe the Fed, and I have a hard time in believing the Fed, but you know, if you over the next couple of years, we're going to see that cycle turn around. I think for the most part, we can agree that interest rates have topped out. You know, there is certain concerns on the employment jobs data site, but for the most part, inflation looks like it's under control. And although, take my word for it, I've never seen the price of eggs and bread be where it is at this moment. But for the most part, inflation, if you were going to go on a pure core product or service, or, you know, in this case, a product, gasoline, you know, gasoline prices are coming down. Now, you could say that that's, you know, technical in nature, but quite frankly, I think it's a good indicator where we're headed in regards to prices. So having said that, I think that people who are originating bridge debt now, like we have a bridge program that's 1/prime, 3/4 to 1/prime. You're single digits, right? Why lock into a 7.5% 3 to 5 year conventional loan with prepayment penalties when you can take interest only debt at a point and a half to 2 points over that? Okay, no prepayment penalty. And if it pencils, meaning if the numbers work, you'll have an opportunity in 2 years to hopefully lock into long-term, as cheap as possible, interest rates going out for that, you know, for that either 5 or 10 year term that you're looking for. So it depends on the transaction, but quite frankly, I think as a short term for the right transaction, I think it's a good solution.
So the gamble here is that interest rates do not continue to climb.
Yes.
Okay. No, and yeah. that's as long as you go in eyes wide open. You know,
I think any substantial climb in interest rates, Sam, would hurt this economy, never mind our industry, more than it already has. And I don't think the Fed's willing to take that chance. So listen, it's as real estate, it's, you know, there is some risk, right? So this is a risk weighted decision. We're advising certain clients who have that space in their performer to maybe consider bridge debt now versus conventional debt, because they're not facing a 2% prepayment penalty on a $10 million loan in 2025 when interest rates could be, hypothetically, lower and much lower, right? You know, so
you guys said, and that makes sense. I mean, again, you know, for the right product or the right project at the right time, you know, exactly. It's just something you just got to weigh your options there. I think that's the conclusion there, that this is a tool that for the right fit makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Let's talk about SBA 2023. You guys said you wrote a ton of SBA loans in 2023. Walk us through that program. I mean, SBA, I'm assuming, is long-term fixed. Yes?
Or 25 year. Yeah, 25
right.
year.
Talk to us about that if you can.
Sure. So what we found is there was a lot of owners of businesses out there who had done well post-pandemic. Their businesses were doing fabulous. Listen, let's face it. What you can question us, there's always going to be a debate on it, but our economy is strong. So a lot of small businesses were doing very well. And they decided that, you know what? They want to buy something now. This is the time to buy it. Our financials look great. We've got cash. You know, perhaps we're going to wind up being able to negotiate a great deal on the property that they're already in, approach the owner, say, listen, we're interested in buying the property. You interested? Or they were looking at property that was on the market for sale. Now, you know, as a seller of, as you know, a retail spot or industrial space or maybe a commercial condo, sellers got to say to himself, you know what, the market's pretty ripe right now. Is this a good time to sell? I mean, you know, where are we going to be at the end of 2024 in regards to values? Because everybody's kind of targeting that we're going to see a reset, and that reset's going to be pretty much because of a total environment type look at commercial real estate. Fair or not, things on a macro basis, you know, they impact the smaller markets. And what we saw were people really take advantage of that. That, you know, they were able to lock in a rate that was, yes, higher than they wanted to pay, but they're an owner. SBA gives them up to 90% leverage, which is, let's face it, that's very attractive. Fixed rate for 25 years. And on the 7(a) program, they can give you working capital and they pay your closing costs.
That's wild. I mean, it's fixed rate debt over a 25 year period. I mean, it's incredibly tempting because it's the real estate investors, and in this case, small business owners' greatest hedge against inflation. Like, you can borrow in dollars and repay in dimes.
Thank you.
That's astounding. I mean, yes. it's getting through. And I think one of the things, like you mentioned, though, reasons that people don't do it is because they look at that interest rate that they're paying because it's above market. They're looking at that. They look at the length of time they're locked into it. They look at a lot of those factors, and then they look at their closing costs, which can be onerous.
Daunting. But daunting. Sam, $5,000, they're not paying $5,000 in rent any, you know, for their mortgage payment. They may be paying closer to $7,000 because of the interest rate bump, but they're paying $7,500 right now a month in rent to somebody else and not owning the property, and the money's gone, and all they get out of it is a line item on their financials, and a line item expense on their financials. Makes no sense. If somebody's in the position where they have the capital to buy the property that they're in, or something that works better for them, this is the time to use SBA financing. It was without a doubt the leading charge product of 2023 for us.
Right, because it's one of the last ones that had long-term fixed rate debt. Last men
single
standing.
Digit.
Right.
Single digit.
Right. So yeah, that's amazing.
And really the analysis, Sam, is rent versus own. It's nothing more than that. It's not interest rate. It's not cap rate. It's nothing else other than rent versus own. Where are the benefits of owning this property versus renting it?
Makes perfect sense. What is the total dollar amount the SBA will loan any one person or entity?
$5 million.
$5 million. Okay. Yeah. And that's $5 million in cash. That would include the debt, I guess, against real estate, or is that just $5 million? Like,
doesn't include any of the other sponsored SBA loans, like the TIL loans that they came out with, or the PPP loans. That has nothing to do with it. In fact, we've taken the opportunity, Sam, to refinance those loans out that have to be paid back through people's acquisition through SBA financing.
Right, right.
Right now on a transaction. We're actually taking out their PPP loans that have to be paid off, because they were done on a 7-year basis, which made no sense. The borrower just made a really bad decision in regards to the terms of that PPP loan. And we're now taking that debt, refinancing it into an acquisition, never mind a refinance, and lowering her monthly payments or her cash flow.
Yeah, we of course, you know, had an opportunity to take advantage of those types of loans as well. But I think those are locked in for 30 years at like 3 or 3.5%. And I'm like, yeah, guess what? We're never paying those down. I'm going to pay that for 30 years. I'll be 70 when it pays off, and I will be happy to do it. Because a payment is a payment. That makes sense.
I don't care what rate it is. I don't care what rate it is. It's a debt. You know, if you don't need it, I know people who are still sitting with that money in their bank account, but yet they're paying a payment on it. They never needed it. They took it because it was cheap.
Right.
But if they're making they had to start paying it back, you know, so.
Very good. Thank you for taking the time to walk us through the opportunity that lies there with the SBA. We've talked about Bridge. We've talked about SBA. You've talked about a reset that you think is going to happen across the macro kind of commercial real estate. I don't even know how to finish out that sentence, but either way, the macro real estate picture is going to experience a reset. This is a conversation I had with some bond brokers last night who deal with a lot of CMBS loans and things like that. And they said, you know what, isn't the kind of price of interest rates and or bridge debt coming due, isn't that already baked in? like when people are taking stuff to market, and I'm like, I don't know that it is. What do you think about that? And what do you mean when you say reset? What do you think of?
So values are going to get impacted, Sam.
That's what I think.
By interest rates. They have to. They always do. So we're going to see valuations, and those valuations, a lot of, especially the larger projects, are going to be underwater.
Right.
You know, they're going to have $800 million worth of debt on a building that was valued at $1.2 billion. And now all of a sudden that's an $800 million or $750 million property.
Right.
So values are going to be resetting. And when values reset, there is going to be two ways of looking at it. It's a cash in refinance, right? As you spoke about, there's going to be capital calls. And some of the even larger players, the national players, are not willing to come up with those capital calls. They're handing the keys over to landlords. Mm. Now, to the lenders, right. Those banks are going to put that property on the market to savvy investors who are going to do what? They're going to lowball the purchases. They're going to wind up settling in regards to the debt, using the bank to finance it. But yet the purchase price is going to be lower, Sam. That's the reset I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Valuations are going to get reset, which is going to trickle down to even in our local markets. And I think we're going to wind up seeing both opportunity and, unfortunately, we're going to see some pain across the board.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Robert, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. It was certainly a pleasure to have you. You're a wealth of knowledge and insight. You gave us a lot of things to think about here today as we consider what it means and how we are going to finance our properties here in 2024. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
I'm going to give you an old-fashioned cell phone number, which is 914-490-8623. mortgage1.com. You can always go to the website and there's a form you can fill out and the inquiry comes straight to our sales team and I'm aware of it. So I'll make sure that it gets taken care of, especially if it's referred by you, Sam.
Fantastic, Robert. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Enjoy your day.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor, and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.